Now, that is another thing about this philosophy. I guess it's one of the most misunderstood aspects. It says that it is possible to struggle passionately and unrelentingly against an unjust system and yet not stoop to hatred in the process. The love ethic can stand at the center of a nonviolent movement. And people always ask me, what in the world do you mean by this? How can you love people who are bombing your home and people who are threatening your children and people who are using violence against your every move? I guess they have a point. I'm not talking about emotional bosh at this point. It is nonsense to urge oppressed people to love their violent oppressor in an affectionate sense. This isn't what we are talking about. Fortunately, the Greek language comes to our aid in trying to discover the meaning of love in this context. There are three words in the Greek language for love. One is the word eros. Eros is a sort of aesthetic love. Plato used to talk about it a great deal in his dialogues, a yearning of the soul for the realm of the divine. It has come to us to be a sort of romantic love, and so in this sense we've all read about eros and the beauties of literature. In a sense, Edgar Allan Poe was talking about eros when he talked about his beautiful Annabel Lee with a love surrounded by the halo of eternity. In a sense, Shakespeare was talking about eros when he said, love is not love which alters when it alteration finds, or bends with the remover to remove. It is an ever-fixed mark that looks on tempest and is never shaken. It is a star to every wandering bark. You know, I can remember that because I used to quote it to my wife when we were courting. That's eros. Then that is phileo. The Greek language talks about this kind of reciprocal love, a sort of a love that develops out of the fact that you like the person. You love because you are loved. This is friendship. That is another word in the Greek language. It is the word agape. Agape is more than friendship. Agape is more than aesthetic, a romantic love. Agape is understanding creative, redemptive goodwill for all men. It is an overflowing love that seeks nothing in return. Theologians would say that it is the love of God operating in the human heart. And when one rises to love on this level, he loves every man, not because he likes him, but because God loves him. And he rises to the level of loving the person who does the evil deed while hating the deed that the person does. And I think this is the kind of love that can guide us through the days and weeks and years ahead. This is the kind of love that can help us achieve and create the beloved community. I think this is what Jesus meant when he said, love your enemies, and I'm so happy he didn't say like your enemies. It's pretty difficult to like some people. Like is an affectionate. It has sentimental qualities, and frankly, it's difficult to like. I find it very difficult to like Senator Thurman and Senator Easton and the things they are doing on this civil rights issue and the way they are voting. I really don't like it. But Jesus says, love them, and love is greater than like. Love is understanding creative, redemptive goodwill for all men. And I seriously say that I think this can stand at the center of the nonviolent movement and help bring about the new America, the great America. And so, as Dr. Oxnam said earlier, we can stand before our violent, most violent opponents and say in substance, we will match your capacity to inflict suffering by our capacity to endure suffering. We will meet your physical force with soul force. Do to us what you will, and we will still love you. We cannot in all good conscience obey your unjust laws, because non-cooperation with evil is as much a moral obligation as is cooperation with good. And so throw us in jail, and we will still love you. Bomb our homes and threaten our children, and as difficult as it is, we will still love you. send your hooded perpetrators of violence into our communities at the midnight hours and beat us and drag us out on some wayside road and leave us half dead. And as difficult as it is, we will still love you. But be ye assured that we will wear you down by our capacity to suffer, and one day we will win our freedom. We will so appeal to your heart and your conscience that we will win you in the process, and our victory will be a double victory. This is a nonviolent message, and it is this message, it is this approach, it is this method that has been used all across the country. Students by the thousands have taken our deep groans and passionate yearnings for freedom and filtered them in their own souls and fashioned them into a creative protest, which is an epic known all over our nation. And as a result of that disciplined, dignified, determined, courageous, yet nonviolent efforts, they have been able to bring about integration at lunch counters in more than 350 cities in the South. And things are still happening as a result of the nonviolent movement. And so this method will help the individuals who use it go into the new age which is emerging with the right attitude. It will help every Negro as he struggles to realize that he must struggle with all his might for first-class citizenship, but he must not use second-class methods to gain it. It will help him to realize that he must not substitute one tyranny for another. He will realize that a doctrine of black supremacy is as dangerous as a doctrine of white supremacy, and that God is not interested merely in the freedom of black men and brown men and yellow men, but God is interested in the freedom of the whole human race and the creation of a society where all men will live together as brothers and every man will respect the dignity and worth of human personality. This is what the nonviolent discipline, when one takes it seriously, says. And so I'm convinced that with all of these methods at work, we will be able to move on into that new and great day when the American dream will be a reality. And may I say that this problem which we face is not a sectional problem. This problem which we face is not confined to any particular community. The fact is that no section of our country can boast of clean hands in the area of brotherhood. It is one thing for a white person of goodwill in the North to rise up with righteous indignation when a bus is burned with freedom riders in Anniston, Alabama, or when a courageous James Meredith cannot go to a state-supported university without 16,000 federal troops. Or when a church is bombed in Birmingham, Alabama, and four unoffending, beautiful, innocent girls are killed. But it is also necessary for a white person of goodwill to rise up with as much righteous indignation when a Negro cannot live in his neighborhood, or when a Negro cannot get a job in his particular firm, or when a Negro cannot join his professional society, his fraternity, or her sorority. If this problem is to be solved, there must be something of a divine discontent. There are certain words in every academic discipline that soon become stereotypes and cliches. Every academic discipline has its technical vocabulary. Modern psychology has a word that is probably used more than any other word in psychology. It is a word, maladjusted. This is the ringing cry of modern child psychology, maladjusted. And certainly we all want to live the well-adjusted life in order to avoid neurotic and schizophrenic personalities. But I say to you this evening that there are certain things in our nation and in our world to which I'm proud to be maladjusted, and to which I hope all men of goodwill will be maladjusted until the good societies realize. I never intend to adjust myself to segregation and discrimination. I never intend to become adjusted to religious bigotry. I never intend to adjust myself to economic conditions that will take necessities from the many to give luxuries to the few. I never intend to adjust myself to the madness of militarism and the self-defeating effects of physical violence. But in a day when Sputniks and explorers are dashing through outer space and guided ballistic missiles are carving highways of death through the stratosphere, no nation can win a war. It is no longer a choice between violence and nonviolence. It is either nonviolence or non-existence. And the alternative to disarmament, the alternative to suspension of nuclear tests, the alternative to strengthening the United Nations and thereby disarming the whole world may well be a civilization plunged into the abyss of annihilation. And this is why I welcome the recent test ban treaty. Indeed, there is need for a new organization in our world, the International Association for the Advancement of Creative Maladjustment. Men and women who will be maladjusted. Maladjusted as the prophet Amos, who in the midst of the injustices of his day could cry out in words that echo across the centuries, "Let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream." As maladjusted as Abraham Lincoln, who had the vision to see that this nation could not survive half slave and half free. As maladjusted as Thomas Jefferson, who in the words that I quoted earlier could cry out, "All men are created equal." As maladjusted as Jesus of Nazareth, who could say to his followers, "Love your enemies, bless them that curse you, pray for them that despitefully use you." And through such maladjustment, we will be able to emerge from the bleak and desolate midnight of man's inhumanity to man into the bright and glittering daybreak of freedom and justice. And I am still convinced that this day can and this day will come. Before the victory for brotherhood is won, some more will get scarred up a bit. Some more will be thrown into jail. Before the victory is won, maybe some more, like a courageous Medgar Evers, will have to face physical death. But if physical death is the price that some must pay to free their children and their white brothers from a permanent death of the spirit, then nothing can be more redemptive. Before the victory is won, some will have to suffer and sacrifice and spend restless nights. But I am convinced that it can be won. And I am convinced of that because Carlyle is right. No lie can live forever. I'm convinced of that because that is something in this universe which justifies William Cullen Bryant in saying, "Truth crushed earth will rise again." I'm convinced of that because that is something in this universe that justifies James Russell Lowell in saying, "Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne." Yet that scaffold sways the future, and behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. With this faith, we will be able to move into this new day. With this faith, we will be able to adjourn the councils of despair and bring new light into the dark chambers of pessimism. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. This will be a great day. This will be the day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last." Thank you.